Welcome to the Anaheim Calling Podcast, Monday night edition, post-trade deadline edition. We finally made it through the trade deadline. The dust has settled, and we're here to pick up all the pieces. Joined tonight by Jake Rudolph, of course. We've talked ad nauseum about what this trade deadline would look like for the Ducks, and the results are in. Jake, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumb in between?
Thumb definitely in between. Let's go with that. Trending towards the down, but I think a little bit more positive now that I've had a bit of time to digest and really think through everything.
Yes. So let's just jump right in, which is something that we don't ever really do. So let's jump right in.
Yep.
The Ducks made two moves today officially because, well, let's just go in. So the Chris Kelly, who we had been reported to be joining the Ducks over the weekend, it's official today. He will be a member of the Anaheim Ducks, but let's just talk about the trade that happened today. The Ducks traded Chris Wagner to the New York Islanders in exchange for 38-year-old and 300 days Jason Chimera. Now, in our list of trade targets, I don't think Jason Chimera was ever on the list.
No, but I do vaguely recall, and this kind of popped in my head on my drive home from work today, that the Ducks were considering trading for him. I think it was like a year and a half ago. Something along those lines during his last year at Washington, when Washington was potentially shopping him. And so seeing that name pop up as a trade that the Ducks made wasn't exactly surprising, but yeah.
Yeah, but as far as this trade deadline was concerned, definitely a surprise. We had, you know, there was the kind of the list of names that everyone had been floating around, the Pacioretty's, the Vaneks, the Evander Kane's. The Ducks were in on every big name today. I mean, Max Pacioretty, it sounds like they were in talks with the Canadiens. Same with Buffalo and Vanek, I'm not so sure. Jack Johnson in Columbus, they were also in on. And we'll get into this later, but Bob Murray simply was not willing to pay some of the prices that were being asked. And we'll get into why that is later on. But let's just break down the Jason Chimera acquisition first. Jason Chimera, like I mentioned, 38 years of age, acquired for Chris Wagner. And, you know, the rationale, as explained by Bob Murray today, was that Chimera brings some speed, brings some veteran leadership to a team that maybe needs a little bit of that right now from different parts of the lineup. But if you kind of just look at it bare bones, Jason Chimera, if he is truly faster than Chris Wagner at this point in his career, although certainly getting up there in the age, I mean, he's been known for his speed throughout his career, and that certainly can't be overlooked. But you look at some of the quick numbers here. I mean, Chimera with two goals on the season, shooting him. I mean, shooting almost feel bad for the guy.
It's
shooting 2.9, shooting 2.9% as a shooting percentage on the season. That's after coming off consecutive 20-goal years.
And I would actually say the first one was a bit sustainable, shooting 12%. Last year, a little bit unsustainable, being up at 16.5%.
Right. So the regression to the mean has really done Chimera dirty. Maybe the change of scenery, maybe just the fact that, you know, the way these things work, maybe he starts trending upward and the Ducks are the beneficiaries. Yep. If you compare the numbers in terms of 5-on-5 impact, I mean, Chimera's had a very rough season, you know, just basically when he's been out there, typically it's been with Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck, and they've just been brutally outshot, both well below 45% shot share together. And even when he's without those guys, he's kind of flirting with 45%. Yeah. In any case, doesn't seem to be having a positive impact on play, but you have to factor in that the Islanders have been kind of brutal as of late.
Yeah.
Chris Wagner's numbers have essentially been the same. So this is really, if I were to summarize it in one sentence, this trade was a matter of taste.
Yep, I think that's fair.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, it's trading off a young guy that is going to be, I believe he was either going to be an RFA or UFA in Chris Wagner that you probably just didn't have in your plans and wanted to bring in a guy that has a bit more of a veteran presence, kind of those intangible type things that we don't exactly talk about too much or care too much about with the way that we look at the game. But the general manager of this team definitely does care about those types of things. And so that's definitely something that he probably considered. The thing that's concerning to me is I'm looking at his stats through the past couple of years, and dating back to the 2012-13 season, Jason Chimera has never been above 50% in terms of Corsi 4 percentage, and he's been below 50% also in scoring chances for. He's had two seasons, it looks like, over that span, above 50% in goals 4 percentage and below 50% in high danger chances. And so he's not a guy that's ever gotten the benefit or basically been able to drive play in the positive direction. And even in the seasons that he's been scoring a bunch of goals and getting the bounces like last year, he was only at 50% goals for. So that means he was on the ice for as many goals for as goals against. And so that's kind of concerning moving forward with this trade.
Yeah, I mean, well, as far as this season goes, you know, the Islanders have been such a train wreck that it's almost, and the goaltending especially has been just incredibly bad. But in any case, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of evidence that Chimera is going to have this like crazy impact on the Ducks. Although the thing that we've been talking about before we started recording, and you know, even earlier in the day, is that the Ducks are not a team as of late, at least, or this season in the Carlisle regime round two that really rolls four lines, that really uses its fourth line all that much. And so realistically, you know, the comparable impact between Wagner and Chimera, I mean, you said it, Jake, it's a bit negligible.
Yep.
I think that, like I said, kind of a matter of taste for Bob Murray. I think he wanted to bring in a little more speed. He talked about it a lot in today's press conference, saying that we need more speed. The league is getting faster. And also, I think that he wanted to bring in some voices into this locker room.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think a Chris Wagner is really kind of really a leader in there. And so Chimera is a guy that's been around the league that I think is kind of universally liked, it seems. And I think he's going to get in there, and who knows, maybe that has an effect. I think we can't totally discount that.
Well, and I also think he had mentioned, I looked up Jason Chimera's brief comments after being traded to the Ducks. He's played with Ryan Getzlaf before at World Championships and things like that. So he does know that, or know him. And I guarantee you Getzlaf probably gave the sign off on this trade. And so that's, I think, probably the biggest takeaway from this trade, is that this was something probably brought in strictly for locker room presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you kind of look into Bob Murray's comments today, and there's a lot of alluding to locker room culture. There's a lot of alluding to the spirit of the team, and you know, I don't totally disagree. I mean, I think that you look at the way this team has played, and let's put yourself in the chair of Bob Murray. And I think he is aware of the way this team is playing, you know, kind of just on its face, and it's been playing relatively well. But these games, yes, you know, that we've seen where they just kind of don't show up, you know, and those games have not been few and far between. It's kind of become a bit of a trend, and I have to imagine that this acquisition has something to do with that.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, I mean, I've kind of let it be known that this seems like it's something that's not going to help the team too much on the ice. It seems like it's something more for the locker room. One thing I do want to kind of touch on with Jason Chimera specifically is a lot of people were talking about, why are we bringing in a guy that has a $2.25 million cap hit and sending out a guy with only, what would Wagner, I think Wagner was making around $1 million or something right there.
$675K.
And yeah, so I get that it's easy to look at those two numbers and compare them, but that's actually not how it works at all. For those out there, the way cap works is it accrues daily. So majority of the cap hit for Jason Chimera has actually already been accrued on the Islanders salary cap. And so the Ducks actually will only have to take on $483,000 in his cap hit. And so in comparison to Chris Wagner, they've accrued majority of his cap hit, and only about $100K of that was left for the rest of the season. So we're talking about a $300,000 difference between the two for the rest of the season. So overall, in terms of NHL salary cap, that type of stuff, pretty negligible.
Yeah, it's really not a blockbuster. Let's just put it that way.
No.
So let's get on to the other move of the day, Chris Kelly. So let's kind of put a bone the Jason Chimera discussion. Thumbs up, thumbs down, middle thumb.
Definitely middle thumb. I think kind of you mentioned.
I mean, I think it has to be middle thumb, right?
I think he's one of those players where I can't say I've watched him honestly that much. And so when I kind of saw it come out that he was a speedy guy or quick, I was actually kind of taken aback and didn't realize that. I've always kind of just in my head thought of him as more of a grinder type player, works in the corners. And it sounds like that is what he is, but he's much quicker than I expected. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I've ever heard about Jason Chimera is that he's fast.
Yeah. And like, so
that's
maybe
the only thing about him.
So, I mean,
it doesn't really seem to translate to on-ice results, but
I'm pretty sure. I think I read the Score was talking about this transaction, and they mentioned that he's an elite forechecker.
Yeah, sure.
But
we shall see. I mean, we'll find out very quickly if all these things are true.
And I think the real benefit, you kind of briefly mentioned this, is if his minutes get elevated and it makes it so the fourth line has to play a bit more.
Well, right. I mean, we've seen how many games have we seen in the past, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks where, you know, multiple guys in the fourth line are in the single digits in terms of minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like it's a regular occurrence. And, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 because on one hand, those guys are playing more and they're going to be they're taking minutes away from guys who could probably use some, you know, a little bit of a cutback in their ice time, like the top line of Getzlaff and Kessler. But at the same time, if these guys aren't very good and they're playing more, I mean, we'll see what kind of effect that has. I'm going to agree with you. I'm not giving it a thumbs down just because, like, I don't really have a strong opinion on Chris Wagner.
We're talking about a fourth liner for a fourth liner here.
Exactly. And, you know, the money's going to come off the books regardless. So we shall see how it turns out. I don't think it's not going to affect the Ducks' fortunes a ton, but hey, if it galvanizes the group or whatever, I mean, I'm kind of doubting that one guy can come in and do that, but hey, who knows? All right.
Transitioning, they brought in someone else also.
So the Ducks bring in another guy who is definitely older, Chris Kelly. I mean, we've already discussed this a bit. We talked about it yesterday in our preview, but this is the official breakdown. Chris Kelly, 37 years of age, was in the AHL at the beginning of the season for Ottawa's affiliate in Belleville, participated in the Winter Olympics for Team Canada, had 3 points in 6 games for Team Canada. I think you touched on this, that all of those came in one game or in two games or whatever.
Something like that.
And Bob Murray spoke to this in his press conference today, that they had been scouting Chris Kelly earlier in the season in the AHL. So let's fact check. How did Chris Kelly do in the AHL this season? And you look at the numbers, and the numbers aren't too great. Chris Kelly in Belleville this season in 16 games at even strength, 2 points, and those were both secondary assists. And as far as goals for percentage goes on the ice, 40%. So in the AHL, a career NHLer gets outscored, doesn't really produce a ton. There's obviously some noise there in terms of the sample size, but nothing that really indicates, okay, like this guy was crushing it at that level. And I don't know if he was injured last season, because he played 82 games.
Yeah,
so
it was actually 2 seasons ago that he, I think, had some sort of surgery on his leg. And that's actually something that a lot of people have brought up, that he wasn't basically back to his fully healthy self last season and really didn't get back to being fully healthy until midway through this year when he was playing over in Europe. And so it's something where I'm not too jazzed about this signing. I really don't know what he brings. We kind of jumped into this last night a bit, but the one thing I'll say, and it's kind of going to be similar to what I said about Chimera, I have to wait and see a bit because I just honestly don't know enough. And maybe he has come back from that injury and maybe has rehabbed and will be all right. My gut tells me it really won't make a difference because he's a 37-year-old guy. But
Well, Chris Kelly has the, like I talked about this yesterday, but I'm going to repeat myself for those who may have not listened or anyway, for the purposes of this conversation, he's a guy who has a lot of cachet, I think, around the league.
Yeah.
You know, the Team Canada thing certainly helps. The fact that, you know, that run he had with the Boston Bruins to the Stanley Cup, you know, playing 25 games in those playoffs, and then eventually the run in the lockout shortened season, 22 games there. He's a guy who's played in high-profile moments. But it's really tough to kind of parse out you know, just objective evidence that would suggest that this is a guy who's going to come in and have an impact.
Yeah.
So it's another fourth liner, and the reasoning for picking up is probably a little dubious. So as a whole, now we're zooming out a bit. What do you think of the Ducks as a whole in this deadline? I mean, didn't get the big fish that we thought.
Yeah.
Didn't acquire a Max Pacioretty and Evander Kane. And we saw some of the prices, and some of them were pretty high. But like, you look at an Evander Kane, for example, I believe it's a second rounder, could potentially turn into a first if Evander Kane resigns in San Jose. Daniel Regan, and I've spoken to a couple people, one in particular who covers the Barracuda, and it seems like O'Regan's a good player, hasn't really been given a chance, but I'm not getting this strong like future star on him.
Do you know a prospect that would be a good comparable to him? Would it be like a Troy Terry, or would you say it's lower?
No. Well, I mean, potentially, no, I don't think so, but I honestly don't know enough about Troy Terry, but I think comparably in the Ducks organization, you know, maybe a Kosala or a Kevin Waugh, you know, at best. I think O'Regan maybe I think he's a little better than those guys. I think he's got a little bit more of the kind of track record and before he got to professional hockey. But in any case, this isn't like some blue chipper, you know?
Yeah. And I'm kind of looking right now. He was a fifth rounder, went to college, played in college. I don't know, just in my head, I'm thinking Troy Terry is a decent comparable for
him. Sure, yeah.
He was over a point per game in college. And so kind of if we were to try to think about a trade the Ducks would have to do for that, it would have probably been something along the lines of Terry plus those two picks.
Yeah, but I think Terry is more value than O'Regan,
maybe,
though. I think definitely because of, you know, the Olympic angle and some of the moments he's had. But I don't know when necessarily would have taken, but this wasn't some exorbitant ask either. And Evander Kane definitely makes the Sharks a lot better in the now. And I don't think they really mortgaged their future.
And all reports did say that the Ducks were there at the very end, and it just basically came down between which prospect I think they liked the most. And so,
yeah. And, you know, I think that one of my big takeaways on this has also kind of been, you know, the track record, it seems, for prospects traded at the deadline isn't always great. And I think that the fact that the Ducks weren't willing to part ways with really anyone in their farm system, I think that speaks to the confidence that this franchise has in its farm team and, you know, its prospects in different leagues. I think that if you're willing to trade a guy who, like, I just think if you think a guy really is a blue chipper, I just don't think you're really comfortable trading him unless you're getting massive value in return.
Yeah.
And so I think that this trade deadline is a bit of a vote of confidence for the Ducks in their minor league system.
I was about to say that maybe, and this is something that very easily could have factored into why the Sabres took the Sharks deal. And so this is something that actually would have been completely out of control of the Ducks, is Daniel O'Regan. And I actually heard this today listening to somebody talking about this deal. But Daniel O'Regan played at Boston University with Jack Eichel.
With Jack Eichel,
and one of, I think, the assistant general managers or assistant coaches also was a BU guy and like coached there when Daniel O'Regan was there. So there is that familiarity with him. And so maybe that was a big reasoning for them accepting that trade as compared to the Ducks offer. Because we don't know. Maybe it was a Terrier. Maybe it was a different type of prospect. But they would have probably had to have given up a prospect in that deal.
I mean, I like O'Regan. I've gotten to see him up close a few times. I think he's going to be an NHL player, but I don't think he's like a star or anything in the making. But I think he can make the NHL and be a contributor. But it's not like the Sharks didn't really have to mortgage their future to get Evander Kane. And look, I think the Sharks are a bit scarier now with Evander Kane. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Thornton once he comes back. But whenever he comes back, if at all. But, you know, I think the Sharks definitely upgraded today, and they're another team now that the Ducks are kind of have to contend with down the line.
I agree with that.
And then, of course, Max Pacioretty didn't move today. The Canadians did not trade him. The Canadians didn't really make any of the big moves that people kind of either were hoping for or kind of had them pegged as making. And I think that isn't all too surprising, because the Canadians don't know it from an ownership perspective who will be the general manager of this team next season. And so I don't think you can make kind of franchise altering hockey deals when you don't know who the GM will be in a year from now. And they flipped guys, kind of the easy flips, you know, the kind of cut and dry ones. And so the Ducks, you know, reportedly were in on Pacioretty. I think that the ask was probably very, very high.
Yeah, I agree.
Because no one got him, right? And so it must have been, you know, a top flight prospect, a first round pick, and something else. And the Ducks just weren't willing to give that up, even though Bergevin and Murray do have a relationship, and even though Pacioretty does have another year on his contract after this year. But it just seemed like the Ducks weren't willing to pay up.
And let's kind of, I don't know if you want to zoom out a bit right now, but would getting those guys clearly obviously would have helped the team, but is this team worse off for not getting them? If that makes sense.
I don't think this team is nearly as good without them as they are with them. Yeah.
But does that significantly hurt their chances to go deep in the playoffs or make the playoffs or anything like that? Essentially, is this team as currently constituted not having made those deals in
like
Europe?
Screwed.
What's up?
No, like they're screwed without these guys. Well, no, I would say that to answer your question, I think it's the price always matters. And if they felt that the price was too high, you know, I can live with that. But at the same time, I think this team is good enough to go in the playoffs, obviously to make the playoffs. And I think that you kind of look at the landscape of the division, and it seems like as long as the Ducks don't drop multiple games in a row, they'll probably get in. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. But I think, man, just Pacioretty or Kane really elevates them to a degree that I don't know that they can hit without those guys. I just think this team just isn't as dynamic without them. And it's that's not to slight anyone on the roster. It's just you're talking about two of the premier forwards in the NHL, especially Pacioretty. And so, like, and I think people don't really realize how good Pacioretty is because, you know, he plays in Montreal, and I don't think he's as much in the consciousness of people maybe in the United States, but this is one of the best two-way forwards in the league and one of the best goal scorers in the league. So that's a huge piece. But do I mind them not getting him because they felt like they would have to gut, you know, a significant chunk of their prospect pool? I don't mind that at all because I think, look, now the worst case is you still have the team that you've been rolling out the entire season. And there's reason to believe that this team is already playing pretty well. There's a good chance that they'll make the playoffs. And so, yeah, like to kind of, I guess, bring this full circle, it's not the end of the world that they didn't get those guys.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that if we do look up kind of all the stats that we've been talking about, they've been playing well since Christmas, since everyone's been healthy. And I think that they'll keep playing that way. They'll make the playoffs. I think whether they make a deep run is kind of dependent on a bunch of different factors, and getting those types of guys would have helped a lot in that chance to go on a deep run. The only thing for me, just as a Ducks fan, that's a bit disappointing is this year and next year are kind of like the last kicks at the can, I think, for this core. If you look at a lot of different things, aging curves and that different type of stuff, this was kind of it. And so going for it and getting a guy like Pacioretty, and even if it was selling a fair amount of your assets for this playoff run and next playoff run, it really kind of would have been that last kind of piece of the puzzle, I think is a good way to put it, to try to really give this roster their best chance to succeed, essentially setting them up for success. Whereas now you are, I don't think he's setting them up for failure, but he didn't go out and get anything to try to help them in the long run, if that makes sense.
And that's kind of, I feel like I'm sounding probably a little bit more positive than I might actually be on this. I mean, look, that's the thing. And this is the thing that we've been saying for the last 3 years, is that this core of Getzlaf, Perry, Kessler, this is like, Kessler may never be the same player again. We just don't know. Perry has been up and down this season, but I think generally still a good player, but I don't think he'll ever be the dominant guy he was. Yeah. That's just the way these things work. You're really I read CJ Woodling's piece and I'm calling today, and he said, look, like, you look at last year's playoffs, and once this team gets in, that first line of Getzlaf and that first line with Getzlaf can get you deep because it can just catch fire. I'm like, look, the legitimately good teams don't rely on one line to get you there, you know, and it's a nice thought, but really that guy needs help. And so it's kind of,
I think getting Henrique, getting Henrique kind of did that though.
Versus those other two guys.
No, I agree. I'm just kind of saying that I think you're now flipping to the whole other side of the argument where it's completely dire. And I don't think it's that dire. I think that getting one of Pacioretty or Kane helps significantly make this team deeper. But I think this team is pretty deep as it's currently constituted. I don't think it's obviously when Ryan Getzlaf catches fire, that's the easiest way you're going to win. But I think there are avenues this team can have success come playoff time without a Ryan Getzlaf being Hoaxloff.
Well, here's my issue. I would typically agree with the Ducks being a deep team, but let's really parse that out.
Okay.
The first line has been great.
Yeah.
Like, no question. The line of Kasha, Richie, Henrique has been great. The line of Kessler has not been great. It's actually been bad. And then the fourth line doesn't exist. So when we're talking about depth, at least up front, I don't think that really exists.
I think they're three lines deep. I think
they're two lines deep.
I think that third line. So I think here's the issue: is the utilization. I think if they utilize the Kessler line completely differently,
but will they change that though?
I guess that's the good point. That's a fair point.
I don't have confidence in the Kessler line right now, and it could change. It could certainly change, but it's a big issue.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think one thing maybe we can look at from a positive from today with the trades that they all made is that with those guys they've brought in, we kind of briefly touched on this, but maybe that fourth line comes up in minutes and the Kessler line kind of gets a bit.
Well, the hope is that the fourth line becomes a useful line.
Yes.
That is the biggest hope.
Yes.
And I think that's what Bob Murray's kind of banking on.
Well, and Chimera and Kelly have averaged, I think it's around 11 minutes over their last couple seasons. Both of them were above that actually for the seasons before that. So, I mean, you and I briefly talked about this before we started recording, but it seems like there may be a bit of pressure from management on the coaching staff to start rolling four lines.
Well, I think we've already kind of seen the management flex its muscles a little bit. If you look at the blue line and the fact that, look, Randy Carlyle loves to play Kevin Bieksa. He loves to play Francois Beauchemin. And I don't think it was totally his decision that one of those guys is out of the lineup every night now. I don't think that was totally his decision. Well, I think that Murray may have strong-armed him a little bit there.
And the other thing interesting, so I was looking at the minutes from last night's game, and there's a clear delineation between the top four and the bottom two. Like, it's a steep drop-off between Lindholm, Manson, Fowler, Montour, and then Pettersson and Bieksa. And
yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting because I think we're kind of backtracking here with a conversation we had a long time ago, but that was the key to success is if they could start playing those as a top four and limiting the minutes of a Kevin Bieksa, that would be one method to success.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're seeing that. Absolutely. I think that there's a middle ground here, and I think that it's not that this is doom and gloom. And I think that one thing we kind of have to factor in, and I think that this I've kind of already brought this up, but it's the Kessler line. It's the fact that I don't think Bob Murray is confident that Ryan Kessler is going to return to 100% until maybe next season, and he's even said that. And I think that if he were confident that he's going to get back, that he's going to become that shutdown center who can go toe-to-toe with almost anyone on any given night, along with Jakob Silfverberg, who's struggled, and Andrew Coghlan, who's also struggled, this is a much different scenario. We're talking about a much different, you know, outcome. But you look around the Western Conference, and some really good teams got even better today. And so if you're the Ducks, you know, this becomes a question of, well, am I going to kind of go all in to have a marginally better shot against teams who are probably going to be the favorites in most scenarios? Is that worth it? And I feel like they pretty clearly kind of came to the conclusion that it wasn't worth it. And I don't think you can just bash that completely.
No,
because when you're leading a franchise, you can't always be thinking, what can give us our best shot this very year?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, in a way, and this is going to go somewhat completely against things that I've said before, but it might be okay to just concede, look, this core that we've amassed in the past few years, it might just be cooked for now. And we're just going to consolidate on the next wave. And we're going to come back next year, maybe pick up some pieces. And we're just going to maybe just ride this one out. And we don't want to rebuild because we have the assets already. And we'll just see what happens. And I think that could be okay. I don't know.
I think there's one big thing that's kind of disproves that theory, at least for this season. Antoine Vermette's still on the team. I think if that's the mentality,
but they may have tried to move him though.
Well, but if that's the mentality you take, then you basically trade him, even if it's for a fifth or sixth round pick at the end of the day.
Well, because the issue is that he had an 8-team no trade clause.
That's true.
And that's only two of them, I think, are in the playoffs, according to John Shannon.
Oh, really?
Of Sportsnet. So I don't think he was going to take a trade to a bad team where he didn't have a chance of winning. And then those two teams, really, his market was so small that those teams may have just not been interested. And presumably these are good teams in like either warm weather or like big cities, you know?
Yep, that's fair.
So there may have not been a market. And I agree with you.
That's a good point.
So this brings us kind of to the next topic that I'm wanting to do. So Bob Murray held a press conference, and these are always very interesting because you kind of get a look behind the curtain a little bit. And there were a lot of different comments made, and you know, he kind of spoke to some of the lackluster performances of the team, this and that. But I think what really stuck out to me, at least, was in Eric Stevens' piece on the trade deadline. The last thing that was mentioned in the article, the last quote, was this is referring to Chimera and Chris Kelly. I think those two guys, Chimera and Kelly, can help us get our act together. That would be huge because, as I said, it hasn't been all there for everybody all year. That's why none of them are gone. I still believe they can do it. So look, if he really wanted to sell, that would mean he's convinced, or at least partially convinced, that there's not as great of a chance for them making it. And I think that there's still a belief within this organization, within the front office, within the locker room, that like, look, get us in the playoffs. We did it last year. And look, maybe we can make a run. And we don't have to gut everything to get there. Yeah. So this is like the most – this is honestly kind of – this outcome, I think I was just so unprepared for it that it's been a little bit tougher to kind of wrap our heads around it.
Yeah, and it definitely is, because I think both of us coming into it were of the mentality that they were either going to sell off some guys or try to bring in some guys. This kind of fell a little bit in between, and so it's a bit shocking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that kind of popped into my head with all of this stuff and with them not actually ending up acquiring someone is it leaves a roster spot open for one Troy Terry.
There it is.
There it is, fellas.
Do you think we see Troy Terry? Well, I guess you've already said this a bunch of times. So you think we see him in Anaheim this season?
I've made my point abundantly clear on that.
Right. Yeah.
I think he ends up being on the team. A big part of it does end up when Denver's season ends. If they make the Frozen Four, that would be actually – it wouldn't be until the playoffs. So that could be one thing. It's early April, I believe, when the Frozen Four is. But Denver's been really, really good this year, but they're not guaranteed. No team's guaranteed to make the Frozen Four. And so whenever they are knocked out, he actually is available to come and join the team if he does not want to play in Denver next year.
Right. So it sounds like we're going to be seeing Troy Terry in a Ducks uniform. Maybe not this season, but it's coming. It's coming. So do you want to – is there anything else we should touch on from a Ducks perspective, or do you want to kind of talk about some other trades?
I don't really have anything else from the Ducks perspective.
I mean, I'm still not totally I feel like as time passes, my thoughts are going to develop on this a little bit.
I think it's hard because
this is kind of where I'm at.
Well, I think Jason Chimera has played on the East Coast for a long time, so that's also made it hard for at least me personally to get a good view of him, because he's always played on the Capitals. He's been on the Islanders. Now I think he was on Columbus, but they were out west during that point in time. And then Chris Kelly, same type of thing, an East Coast guy. Haven't ever really gotten a good look or really watched him that hard. And so it's one of those things where I'm kind of going to have to wait and see on them a bit before mm-hmm. I can really put together my impression.
Yeah. And to me, the big thing that kind of has me kind of just for a loop is the fact that the inactivity
yes,
is kind
agreed.
Of is kind of what has me undecided still.
Let me address this real quick, because T-Hole asked that he thought Terry had to have an NHL contract by today to play in the season. That's not the case. That only works with, I think, free agents. He's available. He basically can sign a contract whenever his season's done and join the Ducks. And same thing with any guy from the CHL. Most of them are actually already under contract, but they can join whenever their CHL season is over.
Right. Okay. So that's interesting.
So if
I mean, I hope we see him this season, because I want to know what the hype is about.
Yep. So. And maybe Max Jones gets a shot come playoff time also, because who knows? Kingston, Frontenacs, his team, I looked it up today, are third in their division. And I think the playoffs for the OHL start soon. And so whenever his OHL season is over, he can come up to either go to the goals or come up to the Ducks. Do not expect to see Sam Steele or Josh Maher, though. Their team is going to be hosting the Memorial Cup, so they're playing, I think, until late April, early May.
Right, yeah. So I'm very curious to see what those guys end up looking like, because if they're this confident, you know, that those guys are going to be something, and to the point where they're not kind of helping this current core as much, like,
well,
they better be good.
Yeah, I mean, those three, Jones, Steele, and Terry, are kind of the holy trinity for Ducks fans right now. And
yeah,
so,
there's a lot riding on those guys. There's a lot riding on those guys, and so they better deliver.
Yep, yep.
So, all right, so all right. So let's go through the rest of the league today, because there was a lot went on today. It started off a little slow, but in that final hour on the West Coast, roughly 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., it got a little crazy. So let's do this rapid fire style. I'm gonna throw some trades at you. You tell me what you thought of it, and we'll just kind of get through this thing.
Let's go.
So let's start with, let's see. Okay. Do you want to do only the big trades, or do you want to do like also the mid-level trades?
I'll let you make that decision. And
okay. You're throwing the ball back in my court. Okay.
Yep.
What did you think of Ian Cole to the Blue Jackets for whatever, like just some, like a bag of pucks basically to the Senators? Or I guess a 2020 third round pick.
I mean a third round pick plus some sort of prospect, Nick Mutri,
yeah.
I think he helps out the Blue Jackets. I actually thought that this was a sign that Jack Johnson was for sure going to get traded at the deadline. So kind of surprising that Jack Johnson wasn't traded with them going out and adding a veteran D-man.
Especially because it sounded like it's been rumored for months now. So.
Also, quick side note on that, I am very happy the Ducks did not get Jack Johnson.
Yes, so that was something that was reported earlier in the day.
Yes.
I think roughly around 9 a.m., something like that. The report was that the Ducks were, I think, aggressively they were definitely in on.
From Aaron Portsline, who's one of the beat writers on the Blue Jackets.
He's the most plugged-in guy in the Blue Jackets there is, and he said the Ducks were pursuing Jack Johnson. So, you know, that actually, you know, that kind of confirms what we've been thinking, though, that they at least see an issue on the blue line.
Yeah.
Because you don't look for, I mean, as not good as I think Jack Johnson is, he's an established name that I think NHL GMs still value. And so you don't target a guy like that if you're 100% okay, or even like 80-85% okay with your blue line.
Well, and I think that's a big indictment of Bojmé and Bieksa, because they were looking at bringing in another veteran blue liner, and that was
he's a righty, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and so that was the presence that those two guys were supposed to fill. And so, I mean, maybe he comes in place for Pettersson, but I feel like it's kind of more of a sign that the team was not comfortable with Bieksa. And
well,
think
about it, Jake. Who's the righty that steps out right now between Manson, Montour, and Bieksa? If Jack Johnson comes to town.
Oh, I think it would easily be Bieksa.
Exactly. So is there like a sneak Boschman retirement coming or something? Because I don't know, like would he play, like how much is he going to play if Jack Johnson comes here?
I mean, Boschman will still be on the roster. He wouldn't retire, I think, but right. We got a quick question in the Mixler chat about that. Basically, who would we rather take, BX or Jack Johnson?
Jack Johnson.
I think Jack Johnson, but marginally. I don't think Jack Johnson's that good.
It's not like a decision I'd love to have to make, but I think that there's a pretty long list of guys I'd rather have than BX at this point in time.
Also, so. Then I could just listen to a bunch of Jack Johnson music as the game's going on, and that's never a bad thing.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I don't listen to Jack Johnson.
I love me some Jack Johnson.
I cannot comment on that opinion. Okay, let's get to another trade.
Yeah.
Nashville Predators flipping a first rounder, 2018, a 2018 fourth rounder, Victor Edsel, for Ryan Hartman in a 2018 fifth. So that fifth will be kind of decent, I guess, because Chicago isn't going to make the playoffs. Let me repeat, Chicago isn't make the playoffs. You know, I'm a little annoyed because I actually called them not making it, but a year too early. I said that last season.
Yeah, and then they all did.
They got swept in the first round, so I may as well have been right, but I'm a little mad that I was a year early on that. But okay, Ryan Hartman to the Predators, a team that, who else did they add? They added someone else. Am I forgetting something?
In terms of the Predators?
So at the deadline, did they do anything else?
They also, they were basically the third team in Aberg. They sent Aberg to the Oilers, with Testu ended up at the Blue Jackets, and Nashville ended up with prospects, I think.
That's right. But they, and so, you know, they made their big move earlier in the season, getting Kyle Turris.
Yes.
So now you know, you've added Turris, you've added Ryan Hartman, who's been a good player for the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, the rich get richer. It seems.
It's a lot though to give up for Ryan Hartman, who's a guy on an ELC, a guy that was on the Chicago fourth line. This is a guy that basically was, it took a first round pick to get him because he is on an ELC and going to be an RFA without arbitration eligibility. So he's basically locked up for the next couple of years, even though he's not under contract yet. And so
I think that probably factored into it.
Oh, 100% factored into it. That type of cost certainty, or like knowing where the guy is going to go, matters a lot in these types of trades. And so,
but it's a very Nashvillian move because their big thing is kind of finding these under the radar guys, or maybe, you know, not as highly sought after guys, and then they turn them into something, and then they lock them down for cheap. I mean, we've seen this with Victor Arvidsson now. I don't know the status. I think Fiala might be the next in line for that, but we'll see. I mean, I quickly saw something on Twitter today saying Hartman's got some good numbers this season.
25 points last season, put up 31 points. He's a guy that will easily get in the probably $3 to $4 million range on his next contract. And I think that's a big reason why Chicago was willing to move him, is because they didn't want to have to give him that contract.
And it's good for the Predators, who are not a big money team and who, you know, at every turn are looking for kind of the maximum value on a deal. And, you know, you look at Hartman's numbers this season. He's played a ton with Patrick Kane, actually. And 49.9 Corsi with him, 57 without. And that's 382 minutes without Kane. So, I don't know. Maybe they've got a player on their hands there. But in any case, the Predators got a lot better going into this deadline, if you trace all the way back to the Turris trade. And they're going to be pretty scary in the playoffs.
Yeah, we got a quick question from Literate Gal in the Mixler chat. Felix, you said they made their big move earlier in reference to Nashville getting Turris. Given Henrique's playmaking, don't you think that applies to us as well?
Oh, that was a huge move, of course, but that was a bit different because I think that there was already the wind was kind of blowing against Sammy Vatanen at that point. I think he had a very difficult season last year. I think that they were pretty high on Brandon Montour and the injuries up front. I felt like we had already talked about how the Devils had a ton of cap space. So it felt like that one was kind of going to happen. It was a hockey deal, you know, but there were cap implications as well.
Yep.
All right. So the next one, and this is a fun one, and this is the one that I don't think anyone saw coming.
Yep.
The Winnipeg Jets acquiring Paul Stastny for a 2018 first, prospect Eric Foley, and a conditional 2020 fourth round pick. Jake, do you like this one?
It really caught me off guard, and I think I'm still digesting it a bit. let me see. Eric Foley was a third-round pick. So he's a fairly high-profile guy being a third-rounder. So if you look at it just pick-wise, it was a first-rounder, a third-rounder, and a fourth-rounder for an expiring contract in Paul Stastny. And so it's a lot to give up for. Let me kind of look up Paul Stastny's stats this year. But I feel like he's had a bit of a down year.
But Paul Stastny is a pretty solid top six guy, though.
Yeah, I think overall it makes them deeper because this is basically a guy to play on their second line with Patrick Laine and I would assume Nick Ehlers also.
Yeah, and he's used to playing with really good players too, which I think probably factors into it a little bit.
So he currently has 40 points on the season, 12 goals, 28 assists. He had 40 points last season. He's constantly in that 40. He's had one 60-point season, but constantly kind of in that area.
And I'm assuming a solid 5-on-5 player as well.
Yeah, and so I think without a doubt, makes the Jets deeper down the middle. Here's the only thing that's a benefit if you're a Ducks fan. Only one of the Jets or the Predators are going to make it out of the Central. So
yeah, I think that's a great point. I feel like this is a pretty big concession by the Blues. Like, we're done. Like, we're out. I mean, you don't trade a Paul Stastny if you have ambitions of making the playoffs or going deep. So
yeah. It definitely is interesting because the Blues were one of the biggest teams in the start of the season. They were on top of the league. They were up.
Yeah, like, can you believe that?
They were in conversation with Tampa. Like, it was who's better, Tampa or St. Louis? And kind of this is just really interesting. And they've kind of fallen off a cliff a bit over the last little stretch.
Do you give them credit for kind of recognizing that and pivoting quickly?
Yes, I think that this is a very smart move by them. The fact that this is a major UFA on the roster, the playoffs are not a guarantee. Their core, it's not like they're the Ducks where their core is extremely old.
They had to get something for them.
Yeah, they got a lot. They got a real good haul. This is a good trade for the Blues, and they still very well could make the playoffs as a wild card or jump up into one of the central division spots. But this is
the Ducks.
What's up?
It helps the Ducks because this is a team that they're kind of jostling with.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, so it helps the Ducks. I think it's a smart trade by the Blues. I think overall this is one of those where you'll look at it as a win-win for both teams.
And currently, Daily Faceoff has the lineup for the Jets. First line center, Mark Scheifele, then Brian Little, and then Paul Stastny. So that's a pretty nice trio of centers there. And right now, Stashy's on a line with Laine and Ehlers. And, I mean, it's been kind of talked about a lot, at least last season, that Laine's really struggled at 5-on-5. And Stastny being the solid guy that he is, maybe that kind of brings that up a bit.
Who's their third-line center?
Well, it's Stastny right now. That's what it's listed
as.
So
who's the second-line center? Sorry, I was going through the chat.
Brian Little.
Brian Little. So, I mean, yeah, so that pushes Brian Little probably down the lineup a bit. I would think.
But they can kind of stagger both that kind of middle six, and yeah. I mean,
it makes them deep.
So anyway, I love it for both sides, honestly, because I think Winnipeg should go for it. Like, they have a really good team, and you know, these opportunities don't stay around forever.
Do you think he resigns there?
I don't know. I think there's a possibility. I think there's a strong possibility, actually, because he was willing to move his no trade clause to go there, and like, Winnipeg, like, the better question is how many no trade clauses are they not on in the NHL?
I mean he gets to go there in spring.
But no one wants to go to Winnipeg.
Yeah,
no one.
Because it seems like it's very, very cold. And,
yeah.
Oh, but, wait, and the Wi-Fi is bad.
But Stastny has, you know, obviously his father, famously Peter, and his uncle Anton played for the Quebec Nordiques.
True.
And so, you know, there's a bit more of a connection to Canada there. All right. Let's move on to another one. Let's see. What do we got that could be of interest? Let's talk Evander Kane. I think we briefly touched on it. But Evander Kane goes to the San Jose Sharks. Conditional 2019 first-round pick. We've already talked about those conditions. Conditional fourth-round pick. And then Danny O'Regan. So kind of like some stuff, some like mushy stuff to the Sabres. Potentially like a B-grade prospect for a guy who's going to really improve their forward group.
Do you think this is one of those where his value was hurt by the off-ice kind of implications, basically?
I think so. And I think I feel like the market may have also dried up on the Sabres because this was a later trade. Yeah. And I feel like at some point they had to move him. And I feel like they were asking for a ton and they were just like, you know what? We got to pull the trigger.
This isn't like Pacioretty where it was fine for the Canadians to sit on him and basically ask for what they wanted and not take anything less because they can trade him then in the offseason.
Yeah, and he's still got another year. So the Canadians can do this dance again next year. But Evander Kane being a rental, there was no reason for the Sabres not to trade him, essentially.
Yeah. Agreed.
But I love Kane for the Sharks. I think that this is exactly what they needed. They needed a shot in the arm offensively, and they're gonna get that in spades. I like it for the Sabres. I don't love it. I think, you know, I just feel like there had to be something better out there, but maybe they kind of overestimated the market. Okay, on to the next trade. Thomas Vanek to the Columbus Blue Jackets for Jussi Jokinen and Tyler Motte. I mean, first off, what in the hell are the Vancouver Canucks doing? And I guess good for the Blue Jackets, right?
Bim Jennings makes an appearance.
I mean, poor Jussi Jokinen, man. Just never unpack, basically.
Fourth team this year. He went from the Kings to the Oilers to Columbus. He finally was on a team that looked like they were safe in a playoff spot and then gets traded at the last second. This is now, I think I saw somebody say this is now the third deadline in a row where the Canucks sold off some guys and they've yet to get a first round pick for it.
I think the Canucks are very, very confusing. Actually, it's not very confusing. They have no idea what they're doing. So
100%. I think Jim Benning is one of the worst GMs in the league. I don't think he's the worst, but
Who's worse? I mean, is it Shirelli?
Yeah, 100% Chiarelli.
Okay. Well, Chiarelli's... I'm never gonna pass up an opportunity to get in a jab there. But
Pete Chiarelli is by far the worst general manager in this league. He is hilarious.
I like Vanek for the Blue Jackets.
Yes,
I think they need some help, and they did pretty nicely with this deadline. I mean, I don't know how good of a prospect Mott is, but you know, the Blue Jackets are a team that should kind of be going for it right now. And to get Vanek and Cole, it's a nice little haul.
Well, and I think I saw, it may have been Travis Yost, I can't fully remember who brought it up, but the fact that a big success for the Blue Jackets last year and what really drove their success was having these lower line guys being very successful on the power play. And so even though
Sam Gagne.
Yep. And so even though they weren't getting as many minutes at even strength, they were kind of these power play specialists. And Thomas Vanek is kind of that same mold.
Yeah, exactly. So I like it for the Blue Jackets. And I like that everyone's going for it. Like in the Eastern Conference, I mean, it's the Eastern Conference playoffs have the potential to be some of the best that we've seen in years. So I'm excited for that. Like, we're not going to see the Senators again in round three.
Thank God.
And I don't care how many Senators fans I offend with that. Okay. Another big one that we've already touched on, or I don't know if we talked about it on here before we started recording. It's all blending together. Tomas Tatar to the Vegas Golden Knights for a first rounder in 2018. Second rounder in 2019, and a third rounder in 2021. My quick take on this is I love Tatar for the Golden Knights. I kind of like that, you know, it was rumored or it was reported that they were really aggressively pursuing Carlson. Eventually, Carlson stayed put. I like this in the sense that although, you know, it's tough to look at it and say, well, you're a new team with not much of a prospect pool and you're giving up a first rounder. Mm-hmm. But this is a team that's accumulated a ton of draft picks and – you know, to kind of not really totally mortgage the future, but still kind of, I think, build on the success they've had this season. I think it's a pretty good outcome for them.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where if you look at it and take it at face value, it's a big overpay for a Tomas Tatar, in my opinion. I don't know. Kind of the first thing that came into my head is kind of looking at offer sheets and what you have to give up based upon what you sign a guy to. And this kind of feels like that, giving up just a bunch of picks. And It feels like a lot is just kind of my two cents on it. But like you said, Vegas does have a lot of picks. My only concern really is kind of teams are built on their first round picks. And if you miss on your first round pick, that's a big deal and kind of can set your franchise back a bit. And so we're talking about a brand new franchise that has had, they did have three first rounders last year. So that's a good thing. but they now will not have a first rounder this year. And so maybe that will set them back. What if last year's draft wasn't great? And you had brought up a very good point when we were talking about this before the show, but they probably have their draft analysis type of guys kind of looking at who would be available at their pick in the first round. And maybe it wasn't someone that would eventually make an impact, which made it easier for them to part with it. But it just kind of feels like giving up your first round pick in your very first year as a franchise, it's a bit risky. Granted, we've talked about how frustrating it is, how risk adverse the NHL is as a whole. So I shouldn't complain too much, I guess, but it's interesting to me.
It is interesting. And I think that we knew the Golden Knights were going to make some type of buyer move. And I think that in the range of outcomes, in terms of the range of moves they could have made, to me, this is, I think, a good middle ground where they didn't send out a Cody Glass. They didn't, give up, in my opinion, things that are incredibly meaningful. And so by the same token, they get a quality player in return. They didn't have to, sell the farm to get an Erik Karlsson with no guarantee that he re-signs, So I think that this is kind of a good middle ground. And I think, look, if you're the Golden Knights, I understand the concern long term, but look, they have a chance this year. And I feel like they owed it to themselves to make a move. All right, mm-hmm. Let's get to probably the biggest one of the day that didn't really, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say there's basically kind of two more trades of note worth talking about.
Yeah, it feels like this one almost flew under the radar because the big story of the day, maybe we should talk about this for a second here, is that Erik Karlsson didn't get traded.
Mm-hmm.
But by all accounts, it sounds like he won't be a Senator next season, though.
Well, maybe. Pierre Dorion made the comment today, if he's still on the team as of July 1st, they're going to offer him a contract.
Right.
So... Right. Who knows with that management what they're going to do. But
yeah, you never know. Are you surprised that there wasn't a trade?
A little bit, honestly. I think just all the signs kind of pointed to them being able to maximize their value at this deadline. If you look at kind of they had enough teams where they were able to kind of auction them off. It wasn't as if kind of they were stuck with one team going back and forth and then the offseason would make more sense because they could get more teams involved. And then you add in the fact that they would then be trading two playoff runs of Erik Karlsson instead of one. You could maximize his value. And so that's a bit strange to me. If they are so hell-bent on trading him, why not just do it now?
Yeah, it does feel like they kind of missed an opportunity here to get the most possible value. By the same token, I guess they still have another opportunity to do this dance at the next trade deadline, and there's still the draft. There's still an opportunity to get good value, but I think from a logical standpoint, it feels like this was the one where they could have gotten the most. I'm curious what was offered. I'm very, very curious what was offered because it sounds like they just didn't like what they saw. So who knows? But all right, let's get into this one. Ryan McDonagh traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So once again, the rich get richer, along with JT Miller, in exchange for a lot of stuff. Vladislav Namestnikov, 2018 first-round pick, conditional 2019 second, Brett Howden, and Libor Hájek. So this is a huge, huge deal. And let me just start this one off by saying that I love it for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and I think that second-round pick becomes a first-rounder if Tampa wins the Cup, I think, in either of the next two seasons. And so there's the potential for that to be two first rounders plus Namestnikov plus Howden plus Hájek. I actually like the return for the Rangers. I think my initial reaction was it seems like a bit of they didn't get enough value. But I think looking at it now, they got a fair amount of value in terms of two really good prospects. Supposedly the Libor Hájek guy is someone that the Rangers really coveted and think can become a star. And then if you're able to get potentially two first rounders, that's a big deal. And then you add in Namestnikov, who probably his stats are a little bit, it's not exactly an indication of his talent because he was playing with Stamkos.
But how could they not be?
And so I think it's one of those where we can look at it and both teams really kind of got what they needed. The Rangers were able to sell off two players that they wanted to sell off to kind of get futures for. And Tampa got deeper on the blue line. And supposedly JT Miller's going to jump into Namestnikov's role. And they're going to help out that Tampa team. And so it really feels like both teams kind of succeeded in what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I think this is, I think I'm going to agree with you there that this is kind of a win-win. I think Namestnikov, although, you know, stats certainly inflated by playing with potentially co-MVPs this season, but I think he's still a pretty good player, and I think he's a guy that they were obviously comfortable parting with. I think that the Lightning were, you know, all reports are that they were in on Erik Karlsson until the bitter end, and this was their plan B. I think ultimately this is kind of a win for the Lightning in terms of not having to give up, you know, a Sergachev or a point just to get, you know, maybe 2 years of, or maybe a year and a half of Erik Karlsson. Because I think Ryan McDonough is still a great defenseman, and JT Miller, I think he can step into that Namestnikov role and probably be like at least, you know, 50% of what Namestnikov was giving them. And, you know, from the Rangers end, look, they get everything that a rebuilding team would want. So look, pretty good deal for both sides. And where does this make the Lightning kind of, I mean, they're already the favorite, right? Like, are we agreeing with that to come out of the East?
Yeah, I think they're without a doubt the favorite to come out of the East.
But do you think this kind of makes them like unbeatable?
I don't know, because I mean that Pittsburgh Tampa conference final that could happen is going to be insane. I mean Boston, I don't know.
Even Boston,
that's kind of the three-headed monster out East, and Pittsburgh kind of has the easy path where they're not going to have to. They're not going to have to face as big of a matchup being in the Metro, which is interesting because last year it would have been the exact opposite thing.
Yeah. Interesting that Washington was so quiet.
I mean, they were supposedly in on Karlsson,
which would have been crazy.
They probably would have had to move on from John Karlsson or maybe had him going the other way or something along those lines.
Yeah, but, or probably a Burakovsky or something.
Yeah. So moving, you want to move on to the last trade of note, really?
Yeah, so let's see here. Let me take a quick look. Yeah, so this is your trade, Jake. This is your trade. This is all you. So Patrick Maroon, your boy, Patrick Maroon traded to the
New, just like my Lanch.
Your Lanch. Your Avalanche. Patrick Maroon traded to the New Jersey Devils for JD Dudek and there's a lot of guys today that I've never heard of that were traded. And then the 2019 third. So
a third and a prospect.
Yes, Patrick Maroon, Devils. What does the Maroon corner have to say on this one?
I mean, he has a lot of friends on that team because there's a lot of former Ducks in Lovejoy, Palmieri, Vatanen.
That's true.
I don't think he ever played with Nason, but Nason's there also. Dudek, by the way, was a sixth round pick, so not the most highly touted prospect in the world.
Right. And obviously the rental factor.
Yes. But it was a lot. I think I said this on the show. I would have been at most comfortable giving up a fourth round pick. So the fact that they got a third and JD Dudek is a lot more than I would have given up. But that also meant the Oilers really had to step down from what they were asking for, because supposedly they wanted a similar package as to what Rick Nash got.
For Patrick Maroon?
For Patrick Maroon, because they're saying that his stats are similar to Rick Nash. And in theory, I get that.
Could be true, yeah. But the name brand.
Yeah, he's, and just not even name brand, just like watching him, you know that the reason why he's scoring those goals is due to playing with Connor McDavid. And I've been a big proponent of trying to bring him back, but there's no way I would have given up as much as someone gave up for Rick Nash to get Patrick Maroon. I think this is a bit of an overpay. I think this makes the Devils better. I think the Devils are a sneaky team in that Metro to maybe give Pittsburgh a run for their money.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we've all been saying all season long how, you know, the Devils are a mirage. This isn't going to keep up. But they got better, and they added guys who kind of make them better in the area that they've been weaker in, which is, you know, the 5-on-5 game. And, you know, right now they're atop the wild card slot. They're in the first wild card position, and, you know, it's looking pretty good for them because Columbus is right behind them, but then the Islanders are 7 points back. So, yeah, I like this for New Jersey. I kind of like that they're like, you know what, we've got found money this season. They didn't give up a ton ultimately, you know, I don't think they gave up a first or a second, or did they give up a second for Grabner?
They gave up a second. Yeah. They gave up a second for Grabner.
Okay. But nothing like incredibly meaningful. And you know, you make your roster better, and Let's see what this group can do. I mean, I agree with you that this is kind of a bit of a dark horse in the Eastern Conference, especially if Corey Schneider can really catch fire when he's been good this season. So, yeah, the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be a lot more interesting than the Western Conference playoffs. I'll give you that much. All right, so that's pretty much all the trades that that happened today, at least the ones of note. I mean, there's not really any others that I find interesting enough to really break down here. So anything else you want to touch on before we kind of get on out of here?
Nope. I am hungry and need to eat dinner, and I have a sweet potato taco waiting for me.
Wow. Yeah, I need to cook as well. I did some groceries today, so gonna make some chicken. all right, guys. Well, Jake, thanks for jumping on once again. This is our third pod in 3 days, so we've been grinding them out. But it's the trade deadline is what it's all about.
We're using our leader grit.
Yeah, we're using our leader grit, and it's going to be really fascinating now. I mean, everyone's taking their position, and let's see where the chips fall. I think that the Ducks. Let's see. I mean, let's see now. Bob Murray has kind of put the ball in the hands of his roster and said, "All right, I still think you guys are capable. Here's a couple guys maybe that energize you, and let's see what you can do." So it'll be fascinating. Can't wait for the playoffs. I mean, this is now the stretch run. I mean, we are just about to hit the month of March. Not a whole lot of games left in this season. So just excited for it. Thanks for everyone who joined tonight in the Mixler chat, the live feed. And thank you to everyone who's going to have listened to this, on the recording on Apple Podcasts, which gets me my next point. Make sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcast app. Leave us a rating and a review. Check us out on SoundCloud, Anaheim Calling the Podcast, at Anaheim Calling, anaheimcalling.com. For all your Ducks content needs, at ReindeerGames91, Jake Rudolph on Twitter, tweeting out his weekly rankings, tweeting out the pod, tweeting out his takes. I recommend it. I am on Twitter as well, at Felix_Sicard. I got something in the works for tomorrow in the written variety for the trade deadline, so be on the lookout for that. And that'll be it from us, guys. The next time the Ducks play will be this Friday against the Blue Jackets, 7 p.m. at Honda Center. Of course, we will have a podcast for you guys then. We will enjoy our 3-day break. I think Jake and I will try to maybe get some sun or something. I don't know.
Maybe sun, maybe sleep, maybe work.
Yeah, something of the like. So guys, thank you so much. Thank you really for kind of joining us on this little ride here for the trade deadline. It's been a lot of fun. But now we're going to go eat, we're going to go sleep, and we will talk to you Friday. Bye-bye.
Bye.